All right. Good morning. It's 11:18, Wednesday, October 13th. We're picking it up with lecture. And we left off. Hopefully this is going to work the way it's supposed to. Let's see. I haven't tried to use this one. Yeah, perfect. Oh, no. It's going to do that thing. Why does it do that thing? Let's see if it does it again. On my end, sometimes that makes a horrible noise when it... Okay, yeah, it's not gonna like that. It doesn't like to connect with the cable. All right, back to the original plan. I think I just need to explore different cables and figure out the right cable to connect that with so that it doesn't do that feedback loop. All right, back to screen share. Off and running. This is good too because it allows us to take a look at this last note where we left off. And what we were talking about was protecting groups for alcohols. And so we were talking about the silyl ether type protecting groups. And the first one that we started with was the trimethyl silyl group. And we showed how to put that on using TMSCL and triethylamine. And we showed how to take it off using TBAF and then dilute acid. And we showed an example of how we can use that by taking and going and protecting an alcohol group with the TMS group, then using a Grignard, and then removing the protecting group with TBAF. Okay, so that's kind of where we left off, was looking at this idea of why we need protecting groups and this trimethyl silyl protecting group. And then beyond that, what I have is a series of different types of protecting groups to show you. So sometimes we need protecting groups for different things. So let me show you another type of protecting group. Okay, alcohol protecting groups. The first one that we showed, these were the silyl ethers. And I think it's important to say why this is a silyl ether type, that if we look at a CH2 group, the oxygen, the silicon, that this is what, and there's an R group here, this is what is a silyl ether. You know, if you compare that to a normal ether, the difference between the silyl ether is that we're making a carbon-oxygen-silicon bond versus a carbon-oxygen-carbon bond. So that's where that silyl ether name comes from. And the first one that we showed was the TMS group. All right, so I'm just gonna just repeat this TMS group just to show, and I won't do a whole big thing, but the TMS group is the trimethyl silyl ether. And that group is this guy. So that's our trimethyl silyl. And we said that putting it on, the conditions to put it on were TMSCL with pyridine or triethylamine I used. So let's keep that consistent. Pyridine would work too, but, and then off to remove it is TBAF, tetrabutyl ammonium fluoride. And then number two, we use dilute acid. Okay, so that's kind of where we left things off. The next one that I want to look at is also a trimethylsilyl ether type. This is called TBDMS. And TBDMS stands for tertiary butyl dimethylsilyl. And that group looks like this. It has a big bulky tertiary butyl group on it. And so it's this tertiary butyl group, the TB part, that is the tertiary butyl that makes this reagent what it is. And so what do you think about when you see that tertiary butyl group? What's the word that comes to mind? There's one word that should come to mind when you see a tertiary butyl group like that. Everybody's going, word, what word? What am I looking for? Potassium terbutoxide, bulky, Josiah, that's the word. It's not exactly the word that I was looking for, but there's another word that's related to bulky. I'll take bulky. I'll give full credit for bulky, but there's one more word yet that I want. How does bulky function? What property does bulky function?
Sterics,
exactly. That's the word I'm looking for. So sterics was the original word. Bulky is close enough, and I will take it. This is a steric group. And it functions by sterics. It is selective for primary alcohols. And so this thing will react with a primary alcohol over a secondary or tertiary alcohol. So this is functioning by sterics. It's a steric group. And it's selective for primary alcohols. So what we do is we put it on. It has the same sort of way that we put it on. We put it on with TBDMSCl. We use the chloride, and that's with triethylamine. And to take it off, it's the exact same way that we take it off. It's TBAF and dilute acid. So as an example here, we can have two different types of alcohols, and we can use one equivalent of TBDMS and triethylamine. And it would make the OTBDMS, and the alcohol would remain unreacted. And so because we've got the secondary position, the primary position, this group will react preferentially with the primary position because of its steric bulk. And although we're putting that as the abbreviation, you're also always welcome to draw the reagent out. But most of the time when you use these protecting groups, you'll see it written as just the abbreviation, TBDMS. There's one other that's like this too, that sometimes you'll see, and it's another sterically selective group. So let me give you that one as well. It's also a silyl ether. There are a number, I'm only giving you a small fraction of the silyl ethers. This one is called TIPS. TIPS. And let's see, I want to be consistent with the way that I did this. So this one is triisopropyl. And the triisopropyl is also selected for primary. It's also a steric group. Selective for primary. So this one, when we put it on, these all go on exactly the same way. They all go on with the chloride, TIPS, Cl, triethylamine. And they all come off the same way because it's a silyl ether. So the silicon is always reactive for the fluoride. So we use TBAF and then dilute acid. And an example, just using the similar sort of idea here, that I could have alcohols that are various types, secondary, primary, and I could use TIPS, Cl, triethylamine, and I could then go ahead and put that protecting group on. And we would write it like that. And again, that could be written, if you wanted to write it structurally, you could write it out. So those are my reagents there that are three different protecting groups that are silyl ether types, two that are steric. And I guess to indicate that these are steric, it's maybe a good idea for me to write out the triisopropyl. And that's the tip part. And that's the steric bulk part. So why do I have these two steric components? And what is it about this that is important to be able to react with a primary alcohol or a secondary over a tertiary in the presence of another protecting group? And the answer is, well, sometimes I want to work on one alcohol and then I want to do something to the other. So maybe what I have, let's go back to this. Let's go back to this idea that I have two different alcohol groups. And maybe what I would like to do is to put a protecting group on the primary. So maybe I'll use the TBDMS. I'll put the protecting group in place. And then I'll do something to the second alcohol. I will react the second alcohol with PBr3, which converts the second alcohol. Well, actually, you tell me, what does that reagent do to that second alcohol? Do you know? Do you remember? We mentioned it before. We didn't do a whole lot of work on it. But we said that this was a way of converting an alcohol into a bromide. So it will convert the alcohol into a bromide. And then I could go through and I could react it with magnesium metal to make a grignard. Maybe I use that grignard to then react with an aldehyde, and then I use some dilute acid. Take a minute, see if you could draw what that product would look like after those three steps. Make the grignard, add the aldehyde, protonate. Watch that you number your carbons in the way in which you add to that aldehyde. Try and draw that product. So what we're expecting here is that we get the two carbon chain. That's going to be carbon number one, that's going to be carbon number two. Off of that two carbon chain, you are also going to have now an alcohol, and the acid protonated that alcohol. And the red bond is the new bond that was created between them. So we made the grignard, we added the two carbons, and then we protonated the alcohol. And that's where we should be at. And then from there, we can remove the protecting group. We can use TBAF. And number two, we could go through and do dilute acid. And we were able to go through and modify that molecule, adding two carbons onto that molecule, and do it selectively for the position that we wanted to, which is really kind of cool. So that's why we have multiple types of the silyl ethers, those that are sterically bulky and those that are small, in case we have two hydroxyl groups that we want to use. Okay. There is two more types of protecting groups that we look at, actually three more types. And sometimes I don't go through them all, but I think it's really helpful to have them to know what your options are. So the other type of protecting group are methyl ethers or ether type protecting groups. So instead of silyl ether, now we're looking at ether types. So these types are R prime, where the R prime part is the protecting group. And the first one that we look at is called the MOM. This is methoxy methyl ether. And the mom protecting group, looks like this. And the protecting group component of it is that guy there. So that's the methoxy methyl ether component. These groups, we put them on with a reaction that instead of using an abbreviation, we use the reagent. And we use an amine base that is isopropyl, nitrogen, ethyl 2. This base has a specific name to it. It's called Hunnings base. And it's a non-nucleophilic base. It's a sterically bulky base. If I were to draw it, it would have the isopropyl group, and then it has two ethyl groups and the lone pair, and it's a sterically bulky, more sterically bulky than triethylamine, because we put the isopropyl group in it. And what that does is that takes, and I can go through the mechanism, we can show you the mechanism, because it's actually kind of nice. Let me slide this over and put an alcohol in here. That makes RO, and then we would write it as ROMOM. And structurally, that's the MOM group. And it's a protecting group. To take it off, what we do is we take and react this under acidic conditions. And it's generally fairly strong acidic conditions. So usually what we use is something along the lines of 3 molar or 6 molar HCl. And that will take it back off. So mechanism-wise, let me show you the mechanism of how this goes on and then the mechanism of how it goes off. The on part is actually pretty easy. The on part really is just an SN2 and a knocking out of the chloride. And that amine base is there to act as a selective base to remove the proton. And so what precipitates out is we get the chloride anion precipitating out with the salt. So this is really just an SN2 reaction. The taking it off part is a really interesting part. So let me show you how we take that off in a mechanism. If we look at the protecting group, while this is an ether type protecting group, it also has another functional group name. And that other functional group name is called an acetal. It's related to sugar chemistry or to carbohydrate chemistry. And it's how carbohydrates function. And the acetal functional group, an acetal functional group has two oxygens connected to the same carbon and at least one proton. This is called an acetal. And so this has two protons on it rather than just the one, but it has to have at least one in order for it to be an acetal. When we use the 6 molar hydrochloric acid, the first thing that winds up happening is that this thing gets protonated. And it can be protonated in a number of ways, but one of the oxygens takes the proton and gets protonated. Once that guy gets protonated, it becomes a good leaving group. And there is another step here that is called assisted leaving, where the group gets pushed out. This goes on further with another water molecule coming in and binding to that double bond. There's a deprotonation step where some base in solution takes the proton away. This now is called a hemiacetal. The reaction continues further. The proton gets picked up again on the other oxygen. Thank you. Another assisted leaving step where that guy gets pushed out. I'm going to start drawing the protons in because the protons are getting lost a little bit. And then a last step where a base takes that last proton. And then everything is completed. All right, so what got created here? So that got created. That got created, and the last thing is this one. This was our alcohol that we were trying to recover. This one is methanol, and this one is formaldehyde. So this guy goes off as a gas. The methanol can be rotovapped off as a gas. Those gases leave the reaction vessel, and the alcohol is usually trapped either as a liquid or as a solid. And so that protecting group breaks down into methanol and formaldehyde and can be removed through a series of acid-base reactions, essentially. And it breaks down into fairly small molecules that's easy to remove. So the question is, why would we use a MOM protecting group, an ether type protecting group, instead of a silicon type protecting group, these guys up here? And the answer is because it's removed with a different reagent. It's removed with acid. It's what we call acid labile. So this MOM-type protecting group that we're looking at here, the key step here is that it's acid labile. Meaning removed by acid. And there's another one that's very closely related to the MOM group that you see used a lot. It's called a THP group. I don't know, let me see. I don't want to go too fast. That was a long mechanism. You guys caught up? Everybody's doing okay? All right. So let me look at the second. This is another ether type. So this is B under ether types. This is the THP group. The THP group is a I believe it's a tetrahydropyranyl group. And so this guy here equals ROTHP. It's also got two oxygens connected to the same carbon, and that carbon also has one hydrogen on it. So this is the same thing as it's the same acetal group. It's just a slightly bigger group, right? So that if we got rid of the rest of this chain, we go to the MOM group. But with that group in there like that, it's just a slightly bigger group. All right, so why do we have this difference? It's just another protecting group that is a little bit more robust. It's a little bit harder to remove. So it requires slightly stronger removal conditions. It's just a slightly more robust group. So how do we put it on? On is with a reaction where we use this group. And we do it with paratoluyl sulfonic acid. I know there's a lot of abbreviations that are coming into this. So PTSA, paratoluyl sulfonic acid. And it is just a really strong organic acid rather than an inorganic acid. It's the ability to be able to use an acid that is organic soluble. So that's PTSA. And that will make the group. We can show how we can put that group on. We can go through the mechanism of how that works to remove it, to take it off. Same idea as before. It's 6 molar hydrochloric acid and just requires a little bit more heat to remove it. The mechanism is the same as the MOM group. Putting it on is a little bit different, though, because putting it on is not an SN2. So we could look at the mechanism of how it goes on. It's actually a really pretty mechanism on how it goes on. Let me ask you if you recognize this functional group. Let's say that the rest of this wasn't there. Do you recognize that functional group? Oxygen connected to a double bond. Maybe if I put a proton on it. Does that start to ring a bell?
That's ethylene, I think.
It's ethylene, but when I do this, it's an ene and it's an alcohol.
Ethanol, yeah, right, of course.
Yeah, it's an enol. Remember the enols that tautomerize to ketones? It's the enol functional group. Okay, so the way this works is this enol with the acid, the lone pairs push in and the double bond takes the proton. So the proton is now sitting there and the oxygen has a positive charge. This is in resonance and is essentially a masked carbanion. Carbocation, sorry. So there's the carbocation. The alcohol that we're seeking to protect binds to the carbocation. And then the last part is some base, a water molecule or something else, takes the proton. And we're done. And that equals ROTHP. And so it's a very easy group to put on. It's a quick sort of reaction mechanism to put it on. And then the removal is exactly the same as the mom group. And the mechanism is just a repeat of the mom group mechanism. So I'm not going to go back through that mechanism. But what that does is it gives us now two groups that are put on in a different way and removed with acid, both acid labile. So both these groups are acid labile. So we have a group that can be removed by TBAF. We have a group that can be removed by acid. If we wanted more flexibility, we would look for a group that could be removed by base under basic conditions. So we have groups that can be removed by acid, groups that can be removed by base, groups that can be removed by TBAF. So the next type of group that we look at is the benzoyl protecting group. So this is an ester type. And we look at the benzoyl group. The benzoyl group is a protecting group that looks like this. And we abbreviate it ROBZ. To put it on, very similar to what we do with the silicon groups. We use a chloride, an acid chloride, and we use a base pyridine or triethylamine or Hunting's base, any number of those bases. To remove it.
Can you write down Hunnings base?
Yeah, Hunnings base. I don't know if I could spell it, but I could do the, it is,
I've been just trying to Google it and I couldn't find it.
Ah, okay. Isopropyl, diethyl isopropylamine. Or diisopropyl ethylamine. Now I'm curious. Now I messed up. Let me see if I can find Hunnings base and spell it for you.
Is it Bunnings base?
No, it starts with an H. Let's see if I can get it. Try one more thing.
It's H, and then the U has two dots above it.
Yeah.
N-I-G.
Oh, okay.
Like Hunnings base.
Yeah.
There we go. So it's diisopropyl ethylamine, and it is H-U-N-I-G-S.
Hunnings balls. Okay.
There we go. I always know how to pronounce it, but spelling it's a different issue. So it's diisopropyl ethylamine, Hunnings base. And it's an, these are all three. All three of these are non-nucleophilic bases. They're all steric bases. So we're playing with sterics here again in order to make something that is just a good base, but non-nucleophilic. That's the important component, is that it's non-nucleophilic. And then to take this group off, what we normally do is we normally do one, sodium hydroxide and heat. And then two, we need to add dilute acid. And it's removed basically by a reaction. This is saponification, which is soap making. So it's a reaction whereby we use strong base to break that ester bond. And it takes it off. So now we have a base labile one. And then there's only one other, which is the benzyl ether. So this is the benzoyl. This is the ester type. And the last one is a benzyl group. This is a benzyl group and I don't know how to give it a type. It's really an ether type, but this one looks like RO and then an aromatic ring. And this is the benzyl group. And this one has a unique way of being removed. So this is RO. The other one was BZ. This is BN for benzyl. This one, when we put it on, we use a similar SN2 mechanism, where we use benzyl chloride and triethylamine to remove it, we use hydrogenation, H2 and platinum. And it's removed by hydrogenation. So that gives us four different types of groups that we can put on and use as protecting groups. So let me make a list of all of the different types here. So we have TMS. We have the TBDMS, and we have the TIPS, TIPS. So these are all of the silicon type. These two here are steric, selected for a primary. All of these go on in an SN2 type reaction. So we take TMSCl with a triethylamine. And then to remove them, to take them off, these are all the TBAF type to take them off. So we use one TBAF and two dilute acid. So these are what we would say is TBAF labile. They have to come off with fluoride. So fluoride is what is removing these guys. We had the ether or acetal type. The acetal type are the MOM protecting group and the THP protecting group. These guys go on, the MOM protecting group has a specific reagent that we use that has the chloride on it. And then off with both of these are hydrolysis using 6 molar HCl. And so these are acid labile and are removed by acid. The other one goes on with a specific reagent with the double bond there, and the acid is PTSA. So those are how to put those on. Then we had the benzoyl. This is the ester type. We call that one the BZ group. To put that one on, we use the acid chloride to take it off. This is base labile, and we use sodium hydroxide and heat. So this is coming off with OH minus. And then the last type is really the ether type. This is the benzyl. This is BN. And to put this one on, we use the benzyl chloride and an amine. And to take it off, we use hydrogenation. And And so that requires reduction to take it off. So these are all three. So this is how they're, the way that I'm doing this is how they're labile, meaning removal. They're either removed with fluoride, with acid, with base, or hydrogenation. You got all those different types. And now the question is, well, why do I have all those different types? And this is the hard part to try to explain, is because sometimes we want to do reactions that require acid. And if we want to do a reaction that requires acid, I can't use this as a protecting group because it would move, it would remove the protecting group. Sometimes I want to do reactions that call for base. If a reaction calls for base, I don't want to use the benzoyl protecting group because it will remove my protecting group. Sometimes I want to do hydrogenations. I don't want to use a benzoyl protecting group if I'm going to be doing a hydrogenation because that would remove my protecting group. And so I have all of these different protecting groups so that I have choices, so that I can choose a protecting group which is stable under the conditions in which I'm going to react.
So if you want a secondary alcohol, you first put something, if you want to protect a secondary one, you first put something on the primary one, and
that's
then
right.
You add something on a secondary one, and then you remove the primary one, and then you go on.
Absolutely. And that
that's
is spectacularly
a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, but it's the only way you got to do it. This is how it works. This is exactly right. And that is a perfect example of why I have multiple types of protecting groups and why I have. Let me show you. Let's do it. Here we go. All right. So here's the idea. What we do is we take and we have two different groups, and I want to work on the primary end. So maybe my goal is to take something that has a primary and secondary alcohol on it. Let's do a five-membered ring system, and let's do an OH here. And my goal is to take and convert this, leaving the secondary alone. I don't want to mess with the secondary. And what I would like to do is extend this chain. And in addition to extending this chain, maybe what I would like to do is to have an alcohol out here. Okay, so here's my goal. And I got to deal with these alcohols now. And how am I going to do that? So retrosynthetically, what we do is we map out, we look at, all right, here's this group and here's all these carbons. That group is clearly there and there's that carbon. So that means that these carbons here, I've got three carbons which are new. And this is my new bond made between the two of them. Okay, so I'm going to desire to break that bond at some point, right? And if I desire to break that bond, then that means that this is going to go back to something that has an alcohol on it and this other component here. And maybe the best thing to do is to make that into the anion and that into the cation. That is by no means necessary. I could look at the opposite of that. But if I look at this and I recognize, hey, this is looking to me like that 1-2 pattern where I want to make the bond on one and the oxygen on two, this guy is looking like the epoxide pattern. And this guy is looking like the Grignard pattern. However, that Grignard pattern has a problem because these two groups, this group and this group, don't play nice. So there's an issue there, which means that this will need to be protected. Well, I can't protect a secondary in the presence of a primary, so now I've got a sequencing issue, where I've got to figure out how I'm going to sequence all of that. So I've got a plan. This is my plan. But now I need to do the full retrosynthesis. And then I need to sequence the protecting groups and figure out how that's all going to go together. So here's how that is going to look. And for sure, it gets complicated. Retrosynthetically, this thing is going to go back to something where this group was protected, and I don't know what that group is going to be yet. Once that group is protected, then I can envision that this protected Grignard was reacted with this epoxide. That Grignard had to have come from that bromide. That bromide could be made from the alcohol. That alcohol had to have been protected I'm going to run out of spaces. I got to give myself just a little bit more room. I'm going to step back this way yet. Sometimes you realize you're just getting a little too tight. This alcohol had to be protected with one protecting group, while this alcohol was protected with another. That second protecting group was put on after the first was put on. And now I need to decide conditions, and I need to decide what sort of protecting groups are okay and what protecting groups to use. So the main thing that I see over here is that this is a Grignard. Grignards are super strong base. That super strong base is going to indicate to me that I cannot use a base labile. There we go. That's what I'm looking for. Cannot use a base labile protecting group. So no esters. I may be able to use the other types. I may be able to use silicon. Or acetal, or benzyl, the BN group, those are all okay because those are not removed by base. So when I go back and look, here's my list. I'm seeing I want to avoid this one. So this one is out, but I could use silicon, I could use acetal, or I could use ether. And any of those three are okay. So that's my plan. And now I just need to sort of figure out what protecting group I want to use for protecting group one and what protecting group I want to use for protecting group two. Now, one, this guy has to be or I should say must be selective for primary. And there's only two that are selective for primary. There's the TBDMS and the TM and the TIPS, the TIPS. So that protecting group one has to be one of those two because those are the only two that are selected for a primary position over secondary. And then what I choose the secondary protecting group to be just has to be something different so that it's not removed under the same conditions as the first.
So what's the yield of these protecting group applications?
Greater than 90%.
Okay.
Usually 95 on up to 99%. they're chosen because they're extraordinarily high yielding reactions, both in the putting on and taking off. Okay, so now I've got my sequencing and I've got my retrosynthesis laid out. Now I can choose my forward direction. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're first going to take and put the protecting group onto the primary position. So we need to choose either TIPS or TBDMS. Which one do we want to use? Doesn't matter. Just got to make a choice.
TBDMS is fine, I guess.
Yep. TBDMSCL. That's how we put it on. And then a good base for this, Hunnings base. That's going to take and put the TBDMS group on. Okay, now I need to put a second protecting group on. I need to put the protecting group on the hydroxyl group up here. And that protecting group to go on the secondary position, I go back to my list. And I note that I cannot use the benzoyl. So this group is now out. I can't use that because of the hydroxide. And I can't use any of these because it can't be removed under the same conditions that I'm going to remove the first. So you see how I'm limited and how I need multiple functional groups? I can't even do it with just two because two of them have been knocked out now. This is why I need multiple options. So now I either need to use an acetal type or the ether type. So I've got MOM, THP, or benzyl. So we make a choice. What do we want to use?
MOM because it uses less atoms.
Atom efficiency. Okay, so Zaruba has talked to you about atom efficiency. Atom efficiency is the guiding principle that if we use a reagent that has less atoms in it, that that's less expensive and we're throwing away less carbons. That's the atom efficiency idea. So somewhere Zaruba planted that seed in your brain, which was good. I like that. All right, so we're going to go for the MOM protecting group. This is what we're going to choose for our second one. So I'm going to delete all these other markings because I don't want to mess all that up. But we'll come back in here and we will use this chlorine reagent here, and I'm going to stick with Hunnings base. I like Hunnings base a lot. And we'll put that protecting group on. And then we'll remove the first protecting group. So now we have to go and remove the silicon type protecting group because we got to show that first step there. So this protecting group is removed one, TBAF, and two, dilute acid. Now, most people would take a look at this and say, all right, I need to use dilute acid. That might be problematic in that my MOM protecting group is acid labile. But there's a difference between 6-molar hydrochloric acid and dilute acid. 6-molar hydrochloric acid is a much stronger acid that is required to remove a group like this. If we were at all concerned about the acid, we might go for the THP group and maybe use the THP group, which is a little bit more robust group. And is removed, requires a little bit more stronger conditions to remove it. But let's just say it's going to work out fine. We're doing okay here. Now we go on and we convert this oxygen into a bromide, PBr3.
So for that acid thing, is there some sort of notation for that? Because you might be like hit like five levels deep into it, and you might forget about something that removes something else. You just think about it.
You just think about it. You just go back and you check and make sure that everything's working okay.
Okay. So no double entry bookkeeping for this.
No, you just try to do your due diligence and try to watch and make sure that everything's going all right. Okay, so from here, now we're going to do one, Grignard, two, my epoxide, three, dilute acid. That brings in the alcohol.
Could you just use the hydrochloric acid there to remove the MOM group at the same time, or is dilute acid functionally different?
Dilute acid is functionally different than 6 molar hydrochloric acid. Dilute acid is just like 1 molar, or sometimes it's even just water. Sometimes it's even just an aqueous workup where I add water into the reaction mixture. You're absolutely right that I could choose, at this point, I could choose to use 6 molar hydrochloric acid to both protonate and remove the MOM group and be done with it. But let's say that I wanted to do something more with this. Let's say that I wanted to take this on and maybe I want to put a different protecting group back on this, take the MOM group off and then do something on that side. All right, so sometimes it's nice to not pull the group right away, but you're right, we certainly could. So now I would do 6 molar HCl. And I take off that MOM protecting group and I'm done. Or I could have gone over here and said, or just 6 molar directly. And that would have taken me to that spot. So that's cool too. But that demonstrates why we need so many protecting groups, right? Because you can't even do it. If I just even gave you two, we already blocked out two just in this one synthesis, and I needed at least three different types of protecting groups to be able to get the job done.
So from a processing point of view, you can do the first two reactions, you can do in one pot. You just add them in sequence. Is that right?
Yeah, we typically wouldn't do that because what we like to do is we like to actually spectroscopically verify that our protecting group has gone on, and that it is going on in the right place, and that we've got the right thing before we proceed and waste more time and money throwing in the second thing.
So it's like a lot of work.
Yeah, synthesis is a lot of work. Chemistry is a lot of work. This is why a PhD, when you go into a PhD program in organic chemistry, it can be done in 4 years, but you're oftentimes in there 5, 6 years, 7 years. It is not uncommon to see somebody in a PhD program still at the 7 year mark. It's very common to see 5 years is a very common thing for a PhD to take 5 years, particularly when you're doing synthesis and total synthesis. Total synthesis people, they are in it for the long haul. Those people, PhD programs in total synthesis, I've seen them go 7 years easy to get the PhD done. So it takes some time. It definitely takes some time to go through and do this. All right.
That's like each step is like you can do 2 steps in a day if you're lucky.
You get good at it. The problem is that if you're trying to make this and it's your job as a process chemist to make this, and you're not trying to do research and see how many steps, how the synthesis is going to go. You've already got this workout and you're just following it in the research literature. You could do 2 steps, maybe 3 steps in a day. You might even be able to get a 4th step in a day, depending upon everything is there, is ready, and you don't have to wash a ton of glassware. You got other people who are washing glassware for you or doing other things. But yeah, if you're doing this on a research basis, you're doing 1 step every 2 or 3 days. You're not doing 2 steps a day. It takes time. It takes a tremendous amount of energy, and it takes a tremendous amount of resilience, of mental sort of fortitude of, this is what I'm doing.
So doing this for the first time takes a month.
Yeah. Easily.
If you get it right the first time.
If you get it right the first time. If you don't get to step three, crash and burn, and have to go back and start at step one. So if you get to step three and you wreck it, you're going back to step one because you got to make it from the beginning again. If you get to step five and you crash it, you go back to step one, which is why typically when we do this, what we do is we do a test run. So we take and we run the first reaction. We do it on a small scale. We make sure it's going to work. Then we go back and we do reaction one on a larger scale and isolate a larger amount of it. Then we take a small amount of that first reaction and we test it on the second reaction and do it in small scale. We make sure that we know that the second reaction is going to work. Then we'll commit a larger portion of the second and then make that. Still reserving some of that first in case things go really wrong. And then we take a small amount of that third step and test it and see that it's going to work. We never commit all of our material, because if you commit all your material and you blow it in the workup or there was some unanticipated problem that came up, you want to work out all those unanticipated problems before you commit large amounts to it, because it costs you so much time to go back to the beginning and redo it from the beginning. Synthesis is rough. Here's the other thing that you got to realize. Being a chemist, when you're operating as a chemist, it's not all roses and glory, and it's not that you go into the lab and every day you have a good day. You go into the lab, and I would say, 98% of everything that you try does not work on a daily basis. You're going into a job where 98% of your time is spent on learning and 2% is spent on success. And when it starts working, it's a beautiful thing because you have these stretches of periods of success where things start working. But 98% of what you do is you go in, you try to do something and it doesn't work, and you spend your time figuring out why it didn't work so that you can figure out how to make it work. And that's a lot of it, is the struggle against learning and trying to figure out how do I actually make my system work and do what it's supposed to do. And 98% of the time, it does not work. And we need to reconfigure, rejigger, figure out how to do it. And that means you're going back into that lab not once, not twice, not three or four times, but five or six times before you figure it out and really start making that first reaction work well, before we can start tackling the second reaction and figuring out how to make that work. So it takes patience. It takes endurance. And it takes resilience.
So again, if you do this for the first time, it takes a month. If somebody's written up a nice paper, you can probably do it in a day or two.
If somebody's written up a nice paper, you can usually go in and follow that paper if it's written well and has no mistakes. You can usually go in and do what they did in a month. You can do it in a week. But yeah, that's sort of the difference. All right, so this is a big part, right? These protecting groups, we're going to come back to these protecting groups, and we're going to use protecting groups a lot and start incorporating them into our synthesis. But they're complicated to incorporate. You got to really think through a lot of steps, and you got to see where the problems are. You got to be able to, in the planning stage, this stage is critical. This planning stage of where it's not really a full retrosynthesis. I'm just sort of like getting an idea and wrapping my head around what's going to have to happen, and then seeing where you have conflicts that require certain types of protecting groups. That is going to be the focus of our synthetic plans, right? And so we'll continue going forward. The next chapter that we go into, they split the alcohol chapter into two. The next chapter that we look at is really the oxidation chapter of taking alcohols to aldehydes and ketones, and how do I do those oxidations and different selective oxidation groups, which protecting groups play a part in, because sometimes I want to oxidize one alcohol over another. And I got to know which protecting groups I can use that that will survive my oxidation steps. And we talked about chromic acid as being an oxidizer in lab this morning. Chromic acid is a super strong acid. It's sulfuric acid and chromium oxide. And so all those acid protecting groups, chromic acid is way stronger than 6 molar. So I can't use any of the acid protecting groups. I have to use other types of protecting groups when I use those oxidizing reagents. So we'll see that when we come back next week. So lots here going on. And as always, as the more we dig into it, the deeper it gets, the more complex it gets. It just does, which is why we got to have all that other stuff. All that other knowledge has got to be at our disposal when we need it, because we're going to keep adding more complexities to it. Okay, but this is the fun part too. I mean, when it starts getting more complicated like this, that's where it starts getting more interesting. And that's why chemistry is, I find chemistry ultimately fascinating, is because no matter how deep you get, it always gets more complicated than you thought. And there's always something to be learned. And you never know it all. And so it's this never-ending field of discovery. And no matter how big an expert you are, there's always more to be learned. And I love that. That's the great part about it, is that I always get to learn. I'm never stagnant. It's never like I just get to do repetition and I'm just doing the same thing over and over again. No, there's always something to be learned. And that's the best part about it, in my opinion. All right, that was a fun lecture. Let's call it a day. I am gonna get some things for you guys to do. I am going to get on the ball and send you guys some exercises and stuff to work on. All right, I'm going to get these lectures posted this afternoon and we'll be up and running. And I do have office hours today from 1:30 to 2:30. So I'm going to go eat some lunch and then I'll be back online if anybody wants to jump in and hit me up with any questions. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. See you guys.